And we spoke to people in a place called Bithur. Bithur is near Kanpur, 1 hour's drive from Kanpur. It has one of the oldest Brahma temples there. And we asked the pilgrims there, and they said, you know, once in a year we need a flood, and the flood should wash the feet of the deity, the Brahma. And if that happens, we will consider that this is Ganga. Otherwise, it's not a river for us. Now, how do you capture this? And today what we are doing is we assume that there is some water that will be spared for the river after all the... That's a fundamentally wrong philosophy. Eflow's assessment assumed that there is spare water in the river after accounting for all its sociological, ecological needs, which could be diverted. First preference is, okay, you meet all your ecological, your sociological requirements, and if there is water left, okay, you divert. Now, this is the other side, okay, with extreme viewpoint, which may not be practical. Okay, so we need to sort of look at the middle path. But we are facing the other extreme right now. There's a complete reversal that's required. So, okay, we are aspiring for this. You guys are aspiring for that. Let's come closer. So that's the kind of negotiation probably we may want to have. And let us question, and you know, let's dismiss any report that comes up with this idea of minimum flows. There is nothing but a minimum flow. Okay, minimum flows is as good as an no flows. And e-flows is an adaptive process. You set e-flows today, the values might change tomorrow because the conditions are changing. There are various variabilities that are compounding to the complexities of the river. Climate change is just one lens. So in a changing world, in a changing environment, you need to be adaptive enough to modify your e-flows. And also, data is changing. You know, our understanding of issues are changing, so we need to sort of improvising and improving the inflow. It's not that once we did it, did the inflow assessment in 2012 and believe that, you know, forever it is the same. That's not the right approach. There are two broad ways of doing inflow assessment. You can have an objective-based inflow setting because you know that, okay, these are the objectives that as a community we'll set for the river. Okay, we may say that, okay, for us, the livelihood is important. Or we say that, you know, we need to preserve the river dolphins there. We say that we need to preserve the Mahasir there. That's our primary objective. In WWF's work on e-flows, we have gone by the objective-based flow setting because we thought that's a way to holistically capture the various complexities of the river. The other way of doing it is scenario-based flow setting. Supposingly, if our water guys understand water, and if they say that, okay, the current allocations are maybe 10 liters of water from a particular dam, 10 liters of water, I'm just using an example, and we can reduce that allocation by 9 liters and 1 liter can be left out as inflows. And then they work around and see that, okay, 9 liters have been used for various consumptive uses and 1 liter is left out, and these are the cost benefit analysis of that, and then they again go back to 10 or go back to reduce that allocation to 8 or 7 or so. That's again an adaptive process, but they should have enough understanding of the trade-offs and enough understanding of the the various water demands and requirements. We preferred objective settings for the reasons I have mentioned to you. Various, like Dr. Lata was saying, there are over 200 methodologies. There are hydrology based assessment methods that are available, you know, which just looks at the available flow and say that, okay, X amount of water shall be let off as the E flows or minimum flows. Then there are various hydrology methods. IHA is a very popular one, indicator of hydrology assessment alteration, IHA. Then you have hydraulics methods where a particular cross section of a river is taken and it is observed for the changes or the modifications that has happened, and it also uses some hydrology habitat indexes to sort of assess the requirements of flows. Then there are the holistic methodologies, including BBM, that's building block methodology, and also the benchmarking methodology. Benchmarking again combines the hydraulics and habitat modeling, which looks at the cross sections, which looks at the habitat requirements, but it doesn't take care of the social and cultural aspects of which revolves around a particular river. BBM is advantageous in that context. You know, it is a holistic methodology. So these are, I'll share, the presentation is available. I'm not getting into number. World over, you will see that the large number of methodologies have been on hydrology. You know, when it started off in the 70s and the 80s, the predominance was on hydrology-based approaches. And off late, you can see that there have been a lot of pioneering work done by Australia and South Africa on the holistic methodologies, and now these are getting more popular. And for us, the building block methodology was the most appropriate for the Ganga, because as an approach, because it was bottom up. It was not that okay, you sit at the top and then look into the various aspects and arrive at a inflows value. The beauty of this methodology is it gives space for wide-ranging interactions with various stakeholders. When I use the word stakeholders, it's not just communities, but also the other guys who are involved in river management. And it's rigorous and well-documented, is needless to say, but it is flexible to accommodate, as I said, religious and spiritual requirements. What we have done in eFlow's work in the Upper Ganga Basin is to bring that religious and spiritual lens to it. Because social, as I said, it's getting widely accepted that eFlow's got to incorporate the social aspects into it, moving away from the technical aspects. Incorporating it along with the technical aspects. So WWF, with the help of several other organizations, have brought that religious and spiritual aspects, and it works really well. And it functions well within data rich and data poor. It's not that, okay, if it is a hydrology based assessment, you need strong data. In the case of BBM, it gives you flexibility. Even in a data poor condition, you can work on it. Okay, like in our case, we didn't have the data for the entire 800 kilometer stretch of the river. What we did was, okay, we started looking at four locations, did our own work and built that data, and also use some modeling to generate the trends. But it worked. But in other assessment approaches, you may not be able to sort of work if the data sets are poor. One disadvantage, it's not a disadvantage, but one thing that to keep in mind is that it's resource intensive. Now, I've used the word moderate to highly resource intensive because it requires, it's a multidisciplinary team, so you need to build capacity of the team, and assuming that, you know, it's not an assumption, but it's a fact as well in India, we don't have enough capacity. If you were to map every river and understand the e-flows, and that's precisely what the government should be doing, but they're not doing it, so we need to sort of take the lead. And we need people who understand this. We need resources. You know, we are talking about monitoring the rivers. We are talking about monitoring the biodiversity, the aquatic biodiversity in the river. We are talking about geomorphological changes, sediment transfer. So it needs resources. So that's something that you may want to keep in mind when you venture out into an assessment. But again, it depends on how many kilometers of the river or what's the basin area that you want to cover. So there are various factors you need to sort of keep in mind before you decide on this. Now, what are the different steps? When you set up, you know, once you have agreed that, okay, you'll do the BBM, the building block methodology, the first thing that one should be doing is, and this is what we have done, is to have a consultation group. And now, the kind of consultation that we did, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, we have reached out to the entire riparian communities in the basin. given the limited resources and the time, what we have done is to have a representative group of stakeholders to come around and discuss on, you know, what they want the river to be. So they set the environmental objectives of the river. And again, environmental objectives of that particular river varied for different disciplines. For instance, the biodiversity objectives were different from the geomorphological objectives. So they, each of these disciplines came up with a set of ranking from A to E. Okay, for instance, the biodiversity guys upstream in the upper stretch, I'll take you through the zones where we have done the work. They said that the biodiversity class is A, that's what we want it to be. When we came to Kanpur, which is more polluted, people said that, okay, even if it is C in terms of biodiversity, we are fine with it. Okay, but like Dr. Lada was saying, you know, if you were to be really ambitious, you may want to say that, okay, even if my river is polluted today, I want to see it as A. Okay, then the management strategy will change. So it's again up to the group to decide, you know, what kind of river you want it to be. So for instance, if you want to take up a river, small river, you first get to identify the key stakeholders in the basin, get them all together, brief them on what this exercise is and what are the objectives that they should be looking at, build their capacity and then have a dialogue and arrive at a consensus on the objectives that you want the river to be. The next step is going to be the difficult part, which will involve a lot of site investigations, which will involve a lot of secondary research and a lot of data analysis, which is to look at the modified flow regime. Now, it's very very important that we understand the rivers. The cross-section of rivers are going to be very important. You know, you need to know how the depth of the river beds are varying, what kind of flows are there in the river. So, the government is going to give you this data. One, they may not have that data. And even if they have, like Dr. Goswami in the morning was saying, who knows whether it is right or not? Okay, so in our case, what we did was we took the help of IITs, IIT Delhi and IIT Kanpur to sort of come up with a cross-section of rivers, and it takes a long time. And you know, at times it's actually painful, you know, because things are not coming out. You know, for 3 years you have been working on e-flows and nothing is coming out. So you've got to be really, really patient. So if it is a smaller river, okay, you can get together, get a group of guys who can actually do the cross-section for you, understand how the river beds vary, look at the changes in the changes in the water quality over a three season time. Look at the biodiversity indices. Look at the livelihoods. We have done that. Okay, people used to say that, okay, we used to ferry, but now the water flow has reduced, so the frequency of ferries have come down, the number of people crossing the river by foot has increased. So that's a livelihood threat. People have also said that the pollution has gone up, so the crop productivity has come down. So there are many, many indicators that one should be looking at. So a comprehensive assessment of the modified flow regime and its impact on all the disciplines that we talked about is going to be very important. Now, once you do this, get the group together to think of, you know, you have defined the environmental conditions for the river, what you want the river to be, and you know where it is. And now if this existing condition has to be lifted to the desired condition, what are the things that one should do? That's the most important part of this particular exercise. So in our approach, what we called as flow motivation form. Supposingly, if you say that, okay, for biodiversity requirements in Bithur, I need 1000 cubics of water. I'm just giving you a random number, 1000 cubics of water. I will have to explain why I need that water. And I will also have to explain, if I don't provide that water, what will happen to the biodiversity. So people have done that, and all the different groups or disciplines sat together and sort of debated on which is the ideal flow that should be provided. So finally we came up with this term called critical flows. Critical flows are those flows which will take care of all the aspects. So that is very important. Now again, here these are all aspirations. Okay, as I said, you know, people will say that okay, this width, this width of water is required, this velocity of flow is required. For instance, in Haridwar, when we were talking to the pilgrims, they said that you know, water has to flow at a certain speed. मैं अगर फूल यहाँ डालता हूँ तो 5 मिनट 5 सेकंड में वहाँ पहुँचना है. That's what they say. But it has an indication on the velocity of flow. So we in most cases what we did was to identify the depth of flow, the width of flow. Few people said that okay, water has to come to the bank of the river. So that indicates the width of flow and the velocity of flow. And these were handed over to a hydrologist who did modeling and other exercises to convert that into a flow, which is in meters or Qmax or Qsecs. So the hydrologist came at only two levels. One is to explain the existing flow conditions, and second and the last part when they were to calculate the flows. In most of the e-flows assessment studies that we see, we have seen. It's evident that hydrologists play a key role. They are everything in that report, okay? Everything, you know, right from A to Z, hydrologists call the shots. Fair enough. But what you're saying is that may not be the right approach. We need to sort of look at other aspects as well. Now the fourth step, so we have discussed three steps. That's one is use a stakeholder consultation to look at the environmental objectives of the river, look at the modified flow regime that will help you to sort of understand that environmental conditions, and also then step three is to sort of look at the actual flow requirements of the river. So this particular exercise will give you maximum of two values. Okay, during this process what you will discuss with people are what they want, how much water they want during the dry season and the wet season. So two figures you will get, but the rest of it has to be sort of interpolated. So it can be modeled or it can be calculated. Now based on these two flows, after you construct the flow regime, the important thing is to identify the critical flow elements or what is called as the building blocks. As I said, the flow is, it's not a value, it's a regime of flows. So it has a high flow component, it has a low flow component, and it varies across the year, across the day, across the month. So that is called as a building block. So to arrive at that, you need all the three steps. Any queries?
Could you just explain like what is the building block part?
Yeah, I'll come to that. Any queries other than that?
LGP.
Okay, sorry. That's the Living Ganga program of the WWF. This is a program which I mentioned, which is focusing on the 800 kilometer stretch, looking at different issues of the river, from flows to pollution to biodiversity. So it's a program funded by the HSBC Bank. So that was from 2007 to 2012. So it ends in June 2012.
What is IHA?
IHA is indicator of hydraulic alteration. It's a assessment method which is based on hydrology. For instance, if hydraulic alteration is, you know, if a river is there and if a dam is made, so what are the hydrologic alterations that are happening? So you pick those flow data, put it into a set software, and you can sort of get it. I think IHA is a free software. You can get it in there.
One more. You are mentioning that...
No, I can't see you.
Okay. Okay. You are mentioning that river flow regime is not considered to get a result from the environmental flow. But in the famous paper of Coe et al. 1997, he regarded that the natural flow rhythm is the key driver of the water quality and quantity. It's the key driver of maintaining the downstream ecology. So, I believe that the flow rhythm, either it may be daily, you have also mentioned that daily basis or hourly basis, this is very difficult to calculate all these things. But I think that this is this, if you can calculate the flow rhythm, that can be a key driver to assess the environmental flow, particularly in the river system.
I think can you repeat the question, but I think the message that you are giving, I think we are on the same.
You are mentioning that this flow rhythm is not a suitable method to calculate the environmental flow.
No, I didn't say that.
No, you are saying that this is very difficult to calculate in an hourly daily basis.
I am saying that you should measure in a daily basis, on a daily basis or a monthly basis, and not just one flow. Right? Principally, I also agree with you.
Yeah.
Now, there is no doubt that natural flow regimes are important drivers. There is no doubt about it. What I am saying is, I made two points. If I understood your question right, one, hydrology based assessment methods are short cycled. Okay.
Okay.
Because it doesn't take care of the larger complexities of a particular river, that's one. Second, flow values, if you mention one particular value for e-flows, then that will also be incorrect. This is what I said.
Okay,
so what I'm saying is, you need to sort of break your e-flows values into a regime, which translate into flow requirements on a daily, monthly, and a yearly basis. Yeah, that's what I said. So I think if I understood right, we are talking the same thing.
But another thing is that you are mentioning about the different diversity indexes. When you calculate the different diversity indexes, so it will also help in to assess the environmental, particularly the micro invertebrates.
Yeah, there is no question about that.
But you are mentioning only about the river dolphin and massive.
No. That's just an indicator that I gave you. We have actually done a thorough biodiversity indices mapping. We have also done a habitat integrity mapping.
Yes.
So there are different layers. I just used those two as the examples.
Next.
Yeah.
Sir? Yes. We are publishing and modifying a method for the Himalayan. I think it is mostly okay. It is good that you are actually preparing, taking model of Haridwar area, the Upper Ganga.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it will be mostly similar with the Eastern Himalayan region. So suppose you can also say not the some of the epithermal streams if you consider it, because river is never constant. Forget about daily basis or monthly basis. Even in Subansiri River, I was in the committee, so I know this.
Yeah.
So how variable it is. So actually, and also this thing, for at least any river model, at least you need 30 years.
Absolutely.
But of course, this is a hydrological, and it is a very, I think, very, very difficult exercise, I'm saying. Very difficult exercise. So, what we can at the state basis, regional basis, maybe 5 km or 10 km stretch, if we consider the particular river, then I think it will be somewhat helpful for the particular river. Because Arunachal and Assam in the downstream, the demand, the necessities are pretty different.
Absolutely, there is no doubt about it. And going back to Kavindranath's question, how do you help the communities? If people are interested to, if some community group is wanting to look at a particular river, then we are definitely willing to sort of help you guys out with capacity building and also to put the system in place.